The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community for, I don't know how many years now. It's been since 1974, and they've been underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can reach at 919-781-1973. And now it's time to return to the July 2022 edition of Our State magazine. Celebrating North Carolina, the theme this month is Green Acres. A nice picture of a very green farmland being plowed by a very green John Deere. And last week we ended up reading about the planting of rice in North Carolina, and there was one more section to that article. It's actually a separate article, almost like a large sidebar, so it's less than one page long. I'm going to read that now, and then I'm going to go into a couple of new articles for this week. So this article, which is a follow-on to last week's, is entitled Rice Among the Hmong. That's H-M-O-N-G. There are two sides to North Carolina's rice revival. On the eastern end of the state, rice farmers focus on Carolina gold grown in fields. In the Piedmont and into the foothills, rice is cultivated in a totally different way by the Hmong, an ethnic group that left Laos and other nearby countries after the Vietnam War and resettled in western North Carolina, drawn to the landscape and a climate that are similar to what they knew back home. Tao Li and his wife Chu own Lee's One Fortune Farm, based in McDowell County. Tao, that's T-O-U, came to Marion in 1979 when he was around 8 years old, and he already had gardening experience. For the Hmong, working the land starts as soon as you can hold a gardening tool in your hand, he says. In Laos, it's expected for you to help the family tend the farm. I was no different. A lot of stuff we practice today, I learned then. The Hmong often farm collectively, with people combining to share what they grow on small plots. The Lees have 12 family members who work together, including aunts and uncles and cousins. Tao didn't plan on becoming a farmer, but about 15 years ago, Chu eventually, or rather decided, to start growing flowers to sell, and she and Tao eventually joined other relatives who were also growing and selling. In the North Carolina Hmong community, many women grow produce because they can't find the food they'd grown up eating. They share seeds with each other to get things like skinny eggplants, daikon radishes, and fresh ginger, and rice. Hmong rice is planted and harvested by hand, often with no machinery at all. Some people still hull it using a log that's controlled by a foot pedal, basically a big hammer-like mortar and pestle. While many Hmong sell their produce on a small scale, the Lees decided to do things differently. They set up Lee's One Fortune Farm as a business and as a showcase to highlight their community. They sell their fresh produce at farmers markets around the Asheville area through the Appalachian Sustainable Agricultural Project, ASAP, and directly to chefs like William Disson of the Marketplace in Asheville and Haymaker in Charlotte, and Andrea Rusing of Lantern in Chapel Hill. To meet demand, the Lees have modernized. Instead of the old log pounders, they use rice peeling machines from Japan. Each one is about the size of a microwave and has a centrifuge to knock the hulls off the grain of the rice grains. Through a Golden Leaf Foundation grant, they also got a mini combine harvester. They grow four kinds of rice, One is a non-sticky rice, similar to basmati, and the three other are sticky rices, including an unusual purple rice. Its name translates to blood rice, Tao says, because everything you cook with it turns purple as well. How much rice can Hmong families produce? Tao estimates that there are about 40 families growing rice near his own family's land, each group working 2 to 3 acres, about 80 to 100 total. Each acre produces 850 to 1,200 pounds a year, or a total of about 100,000 pounds. It sounds like a lot, but in the rice world, that's relatively minuscule. The Lees don't take pre-orders because they don't know how much they'll have until the fall harvest is over, and their whole crop could be gone before they put the first plant in the ground. Meeting the demand while reserving enough for their own use can be a balancing act. One year, my wife and I didn't have enough for us for New Year's because we had already promised it to other people, Tao says. We had to go and beg for my aunt and uncle. They fussed. You're supposed to save something for yourself. Okay, now two main articles today. The first one is entitled Hemp Comes Home. Absent from North Carolina's landscape for 80 years, the plant with 100 uses finds its way back to the fields. Written by Leah Hughes. In the Broadway community just east of Sanford, flat, sandy fields of tobacco, corn, and soybeans stretch down both sides of Highway 421. Ryan Patterson grew up farming here with his dad on the same land where his grandparents and great-grandparents farmed their way through the Depression. He now tends 1,000 acres along the Harnett County line. I reckon it's just in my blood, Ryan says, and I've got a 16-year-old son who loves it as much as I do. His daughters, age 15 and 22, help out in the greenhouse, too. Farming has always been the answer for the Patterson family, so when Ryan's dad, Phil, was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in 2016, Ryan looked to the fields. The medicines that Phil tried either made him sick or made his tremors worse. Ryan knew there must be something better. After church one Sunday, the family drove 2 hours to Wilmington to check out some hemp to grow. Having heard that the plant could lessen the effects of the disease and help slow the progression, Ryan secured one of the first hemp-growing licenses in North Carolina. By 2017, he had about 200 organic plants in his greenhouse. One day, Phil was helping hand-trim hemp flowers. He told Ryan that he wasn't sure he could finish the job because of his tremors. But ever the stubborn farmer, Phil persisted. Hemp flowers are sticky. As the Pattersons trimmed, resin from the flowers coated their skin. After about 15 minutes, Phil held out his hands to Ryan. They were steady. Phil has taken hemp products ever since. It's not a cure, Ryan says, but it helps with the symptoms. Ryan is now co-owner of Broadway Hemp Company, a state-of-the-art facility near the farm where they produce oils, capsules, topicals, and gummies. The products are made in ozonated labs by people wearing lab coats, and the equipment mirrors machines found in some of the nation's top pharmaceutical companies. Their unique hemp preserve capsule combines organically grown hemp flowers with muscadine grapeseed powder, bringing together the antioxidant properties of muscadines with the cannabidiol from hemp. Hemp has a lot of potential, Ryan says, and we have to get the right people behind it. Hemp, cannabis sativa, is an annual herb native to Asia with a long, complicated history. For millennia, humans have cultivated hemp for its fiber to make rope, clothing, and paper. Hemp cultivation was encouraged worldwide through the 18th century, including colonial North Carolina. Governor William Tryon spoke of the importance of the crop before the General Assembly in the 1760s. And in 1766, the Assembly passed an act that established warehouses in Halifax and Campbellton, precursor to Fayetteville, for the inspection of hemp and flax for fiber exports. Cannabis sativa has also been used throughout history for medical and nutritional purposes. Hemp has more than 100 cannabinoids, or biologically active chemical compounds. One of those is cannabidiol. That's C-A-N-N-A-B-I-D-I-O-L. Cannabidiol, commonly known as CBD. The human body contains its own endocannabinoid system, which produces endocannabinoids to regulate daily functions like sleep, appetite, pain, and immune system response. But if something knocks the body out of balance, physically, like an injury or illness, or mentally, like depression or anxiety, the endocannabinoid system struggles to maintain regulation. A growing amount of research suggests that CBD found in hemp can help. However, cannabis sativa has another cannabinoid known as tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC. If enough THC is present in a plant, it produces a psychotropic high when ingested. Cannabis sativa plants with a certain percentage of THC are known as marijuana. In 1937, the U.S. government restricted cannabis sativa. For decades, hemp was outlawed because of marijuana's effects. But as research mounted for hemp's potential as an alternative fiber source and medicinal supplement, the government began to reconsider its ban. The Federal Agricultural Act of 2014 stated that federal institutions and state departments of agriculture may grow industrial hemp, that is, cannabis sativa with 0.3% THC or less, as part of an agricultural pilot program. The 2018 Farm Bill removed industrial hemp from the list of scheduled narcotics. Industrial hemp can be grown in two ways. Floral hemp requires more space between plants, which are designed to produce flowers and seeds for CBD products. Fiber hemp is planted more densely, like a row crop, and the entire plant is harvested for its fibrous material. In 2017, North Carolina's Industrial Hemp Commission adopted rules allowing farmers to apply for hemp growing licenses. Many farmers looking to diversify jumped at the chance. They planted it, harvested it, and sold it. And they did well, so well that in 2019 they flooded the fledgling market. Dried hemp still sits in barns and warehouses across the state waiting for buyers. Some farmers and manufacturers like Patterson Farms and Broadway Hemp vertically integrated, becoming their own market by taking the plant from the field to the shelf. But due to a lack of FDA regulation, those growers are unable to label their products as nutritional supplements or make any claims about health benefits on their packages or in their marketing. They can't tell you how much to take or what ailment to take it for. Imagine trying to sell a potato masher without being able to say potato or mash. It's difficult. But farmers like the Pattersons are determined, and those here in North Carolina know where to turn for research and support. North Carolina State University, one of the biggest allies of farmers, particularly those here in the Old North State, is researching hemp. David Suchoff is the Alternative Crops Extension Specialist. He searches for new crops that farmers can grow on a large scale. He's cautiously optimistic about hemp. Hemp is not a panacea, Suchoff says. We have to be more realistic about what it can and can't do. One plus for hemp grown for CBD, or floral hemp, is that the crop translates well to tobacco farmers. The plants per acre, production requirements, field maintenance, harvesting, and drying techniques match existing tobacco infrastructure. Our tobacco farmers are desperate to find other crops and other ways to make a profit, Suchoff says. Hemp has the potential to help tobacco farmers diversify, but it's not a one-for-one replacement. Early on, people said that it's going to be the crop to replace tobacco, but it's not. People don't realize how important tobacco was and is for our state. Go to Duke University's campus. That's tobacco. It has such a historical importance. A large part of Suchoff's research involves hemp grown for fiber. He and his team conduct trials to see which varieties have the best genetics. They collaborate with NC State's Wilson College of Textiles to evaluate how hemp fiber fits into the fabric industry. While tobacco's glory days might be behind us, the North Carolina's textile industry could be warming up for its next act. It's almost like a no-brainer, Suchoff says. If fiber hemp is going to work, it should work in North Carolina. Guy Carpenter's textile career took him all over the world. In Europe and China, he learned about using hemp to create a more durable fabric. These days, Carpenter calls Wilmington home. His company, Bear Fiber, specializes in sustainable fabrics made with hemp fibers. By itself, hemp could be heavy and stiff, but new techniques have vastly improved hemp fabric texture. Now, when blended with cotton, it creates a fabric suitable for making into clothing. Bear Fiber uses processes that combine cotton with hemp to produce stronger, longer-lasting garments that are biodegradable. Domestically grown hemp could become a sustainable alternative to imported polyester in 50-50 custom blends. Cotton is hemp's BFF, Carpenter says. If every cotton processor could also produce hemp, then farmers would have the opportunity to grow and sell two crops. The dream, he says, is a decorator for hemp processing next to every cotton gin. The win-win story of a cotton-hemp combo could go a long way with environmentally conscious consumers who don't just want a better product, he says. They want something that shows their commitment to sustainability. With the state's rich textile history and research institutions, North Carolina is well-positioned to lead the way in sustainable fabrics. We are trying to establish a farm, fiber, fabric, fashion value chain, Carpenter says. Nowhere else in the world are there so many assets and opportunities to collaborate and do research than here in North Carolina. On a valley farm in the Cowee community, rows of mature hemp plants flutter in as a breeze blows up from the south. In this far western corner of the state, where the great Smoky Mountains form high, craggy peaks and rivers flow into low, shady valleys, it's difficult to fathom that you're only a half day's drive from the flat, sandy stretches of eastern North Carolina communities like Broadway. Noah Miller is the farm manager for Appalachian Growers, which has been farming hemp since spring 2018. Unlike the Patterson family, Miller is part of a recently formed team whose members have varied backgrounds. He grew up working on large-scale farms in southern Michigan and has experience with indoor and outdoor cannabis cultivation. That serves him well as he walks through rows of organic hemp plants, inspecting the leaves for blight, spots, or missing edges munched by deer or caterpillars. Lori Lacey, who co-owns Appalachian Growers with her partner Steve Yuzzi, has a background in personal training. Client after client came to her with stories about using CBD products to help with sleep, pain, inflammation, anxiety. The more research she did, the more intrigued she became. She and Yuzzi traveled to Maine to work on a hemp farm. They talked to people at NC State. They studied plots of land to see where they might break ground. They settled on an overgrown farm in Cowee, just north of Yuzzi's hometown of Franklin, on land that hasn't been cultivated in 30 years. Today, that valley plot has more than 3,000 hemp plants in well-maintained fields. In mid-August, Miller and crew hand-harvest mature hemp flowers and hang them to dry in a 4,000-square-foot climate-controlled building. The best flowers are placed in little glass jars and sold for smoking CBD. All the other parts of the plant are pressed into oil that goes into wellness tinctures, lotions, and ointments. Lacey and Yuzzi spend weekends at festivals and fairs in small towns across North Carolina and neighboring states, introducing people to their products. They tell the story of their farm. In turn, people tell them how Appalachian Growers' products have helped them. And even though Appalachian Growers can't advertise those benefits, Lacey and Yuzzi say it's nice to hear about them. As North Carolina changes and its population increases, the state's agricultural industry is changing too. Multi-generational farmers continue to sow the same land as their grandparents, but they experiment with different crops. Newcomers, intent on learning the basics of this ancient practice, purchase unfamiliar plots and bring their own ideas of what a farm can be. Hemp might not be the magic bullet for all of these farmers, experienced and novice. It might not replace a once thriving tobacco industry or fire up abandoned textile mills. But a lot of people believe that it has potential. Add that hope to North Carolina agriculture experience, textile heritage, world-class research, and entrepreneurial spirit, and hemp might just have a long, successful future. Well, let me see if we're going to have time to read this next article. I don't think we are, so going to have to back up to something else. We'll try this article about 10 pages later, called Sowing Second Chances. That's S-O-W, Sowing Second Chances. A former incarcerated woman, a farm in Alamance County, imparts knowledge and skills, nurtures their physical and spiritual health, and supports them as they rebuild their lives. I'm not sure I read the first word correctly. It's four, F-O-R, four formerly incarcerated women. Written by Jennifer Brookland. Kristen Powers fields a lot of calls from prison. Calls from women with nowhere else to go. Calls from women who refuse to give up on themselves. They're ready to change, and they're willing to work. And it will be hard, dirty work. Powers tells them, Benevolence Farm, where she serves as executive director, is not a halfway house or shelter. It's a 13-acre farm in Alamance County where formerly incarcerated women go to get a fresh start. 11 residents at a time tend to the blueberry bushes, heritage breed chickens, and herbs while they learn life lessons that only the land can teach them. Lessons about growth and renewal, determination and failure, and the seasonal gift of second chances. Nature is a very good teacher, Powers says, as she surveys the rows of wooden garden boxes sprouting with greenery on a summer morning. It always gives you another chance to try again. Farming is usually about the end product, the soft flesh of a sweet cantaloupe cupping its nectar, a sun-soaked tomato delicately piled on a crate, on a truck ready to charm its way to a profit. Here at Benevolence Farm, it's the process that matters. As the women weed and water and dig, they are nurturing their own resilience. This is not a flowery ideology presented to donors. It's a concept that the new farm enterprise manager, Euchenna Faith Nwoke, is intentional about impressing upon the residents, even while they're pulling weeds and cursing her name in the 95-degree heat. For Nwoke, like her predecessor, Jen Grimmett, it is up to the women to set her goals and define what success looks like. Nwoke's hope is that the residents get out and live the lives they want to lead. Many of the women are aching to reunite with children or other family members. For others, the goal is steady employment, staying sober, buying a home. To reach these goals takes work. Work in the garden boxes, work on the self. Sometimes those are one and the same. Last summer, Darlene, who lived at the farm for several months after 10 years in prison, knelt over a raised bed of pepper plants and gave a resolute yank, the red ribbon on her wide-brimmed straw hat bobbing with each pull. "I'm the resident weed eater," she said, with a laugh after getting stiffly to her feet. She'd weeded 8 boxes already, only one of them hers. "I guess it's because I don't want to deal with my own BS. I can pull these weeds and deal with everyone else's." For most of these women, there's a lot to deal with. Many are struggling with emotional baggage, lugged around for decades and exacerbated by years in prison, where treating their mental and physical health took a backseat to monitoring their behavior. Just being at Benevolence Farm brings a certain healing. Nwoke believes that the earth has power. Interacting with that power as it comes up through plants, she says, can transform an episode of panic into a moment of calm. Nwoke shows the women how the principles of sustainable agriculture can be guideposts for life. The 12 principles of permaculture were developed in the 1970s to save a deteriorating planet. But the applications for human beings who need to grow roots and turn over new leaves are undeniable. Use small, slow solutions. The principals advise, value the marginal. As the women warm buckets of water in the sun, Nwoke talks to them about how they might capture and store energy in their own lives, how as human beings they can capture and store energy so they don't feel depleted. What would a renewable resource look like to them? For example, a call with a friend. The principles that guide the work on the farm, Nwoke says, are married back into introspective work with the residents. In the cool, fragrant air of the farm's basement, the women strain into grape seed oil the flowers and herbs they've coaxed into bloom and blossom. Calendula, white sage, lemon balm, and catnip combine in a soothing floral aroma over the long table where they make soaps and candles, salves and muscle rubs to sell. What started as an optimistic one-off venture at the 2018 Saxapaw Holiday Market quickly grew into a $30,000 enterprise. This year, Powers thinks that Benevolence Farm body products could bring in $50,000. It's still not enough to cover wages, but that the farm pays the women for their labor. Each resident works at least 8 and up to 29 hours per week. But it's getting closer. Having a year-round opportunity to add value is an essential source of revenue for most farms these days. But Powers says that the work they're doing is reflective of the way agriculture could be practiced in the future. We are training people to farm anywhere, she says. We're trying to bust the myth that you have to be a landowner with acreage and a tractor. Eden Gustafson isn't a farmer these days, but she works with many growers as the produce manager at a community-based business. She also volunteers at the farm, giving residents rides to appointments in other places. It wasn't so long ago that she was meditatively yanking up invaders in the farm's vegetable patch, trying to put her life back together after nearly 2 years of incarceration. After she was released, she says she had trouble finding her identity. The staff helped her set goals, get her driver's license back, and get a car. She got a job at a nearby store where she met her husband. Gustafson asked former farm director Lashana Austria to officiate at their wedding, held on the banks of Haw River. Even after I left the farm, there were still so many involved, checking on me all the time, doing anything they could to help me, Gustafson remembers. I mean, it really makes you feel like you're not alone in the world. Now she works 20 hours a week, pays the rent in her home, and looks forward to visits with her daughter. Well, that is about all the time we have for this week's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it, and you'll join us next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions? Call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.